You're listening to Amazing Discoveries Audio. This is Heal Your Body, Mind, and Spirit with Barbara O'Neill. Episode 4, The Type 1 Diabetes Cure.
There are 500 new diabetics being diagnosed every day in Australia. Diabetes, that definitely is a pandemic. So what I'd like to look at in this presentation is, how can we recover from diabetes? How can we conquer it? How can we manage it? And the good news is, I have seen type 1 and type 2 diabetics recover from diabetes. What is the difference? It is fairly well acknowledged that diabetes type 1 is usually damage in the pancreas and the beta cells are unable to make the insulin. It's often blamed on genetics. Whereas diabetes type 2 is usually late onset. So diabetes type 2, the pancreas is not working well, and diabetes type 2 often starts to develop maybe late 40s, 50s, 60s. But it really is the same problem, and that is that the pancreas is unable to make enough insulin. So what I want to show you is what insulin is and what it does. So here's the cell, and we've gone here a few times. I call it the CBD, the inside workings of the cell. So the glucose goes in, and it goes into the cell under the action of insulin. Insulin's like the key that unlocks the door to let the glucose inside the cell. And the inside workings of the cell is the CBD, the central business district of the human body. So that's where we want the glucose. Now we're going to go back for a moment and look at where the glucose came from. The glucose comes from the food we eat. And one of the reasons why we have diabetes happening today is people are eating a type of food that produces too much glucose. And when you produce too much glucose, then the pancreas has to release a corresponding amount of insulin. So it's releasing more insulin than probably the way God meant it to be released. And what this food group is carbohydrates. So let's do a carbohydrate assessment of the average American diet. So most Americans, I think Australians much the same, they usually go to bed too late because they're on technology, and they wake up and they haven't got long to have their breakfast, no time to prepare a breakfast. So they choose something very quick, and cereal is quick. When cereal is poured into the bowl, milk's poured on top of it, it goes like wet tissue paper down the hatch very, very quickly and out the door. Or maybe toast, and especially that white toast, that white bread, that can be eaten very, very quickly. So cereal and bread as toast. My husband and I used to travel quite a bit before 2020 hit, and we would often eat in hotels, motels, in their restaurants. And I noticed that there's a lot of, at breakfast, they've got muffins, they've got croissants, there's a lot of carbohydrate type foods. So I'm going to say here cakes, etc. And that takes into consideration all the pastries. So the donuts, the cakes, the cookies, you call them cookies, we call them biscuits, all the pastries. Another high carbohydrate food that has become quite popular. And as a child, I never had this. I'm a fifth generation Scottish descent. So I'm a child of the 60s, late 50s. We never had pizza. And we never had pasta. But the European people have certainly introduced Australians and Americans to pizza and pasta. I don't think there's a person that hasn't tasted these foods living in the US or Australia. Rice is another carbohydrate food. Potatoes is another high carbohydrate food, and last and certainly least in nutritive value is the pure crystallized acid that's been extracted from the sugarcane plant. All of these foods break down in the gastrointestinal tract to glucose. That glucose is taken straight to the liver, and the liver basically orchestrates where the glucose goes. So the first place it goes is to the cell. So let's follow the journey of this glucose into the cell. Remember, it came in under the action of insulin. It goes through a 20-step pathway, and the 20-step pathway gives us 2 units of energy. This is the glycolytic pathway. The end result of the 20-step pathway is a chemical form of glucose called pyruvate. And pyruvate, as the chemical form of glucose, gets fed into the powerhouse. So this is the mitochondria, specifically the Krebs cycle. And in the powerhouse, there's an 8-step pathway. It's called an 8-step pathway because of its ability to deliver to us 36 units of energy. It's oxygen that makes the difference. This pathway, no oxygen. This pathway, it's the oxygen pathway. So that's the first place that the glucose is sent, under the action of insulin, to get it into the cell. But on this high carbohydrate, high sugar diet, we've still got a lot left over. And so now the liver causes it to be stored as glycogen. Glycogen is a name given to quick release glucose stores. And I believe that glycogen is the diabetic's best kept secret. I will be explaining that as we look at this. They're little bunches of grapes. Well, they look like little bunches of grapes. They're not little bunches of grapes. They just look like little bunches of grapes, but they're little molecules of glucose. Glucose that was left over from going through the cell. They're called glycogen stores. Glycogen is a name for your quick-release glucose stores. On this high-carbohydrate, high-sugar diet, there is still a lot of glucose left over. And so now, the liver causes it to be stored as fat. I call it our basement stores. Stored fuel. The stored fuel is called fat. And on the high carbohydrate diet, many are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So that's how it works. That's the basic science behind what happens to our food. But I wanted to show you what happens with a high carbohydrate diet. Now, carbohydrates are not bad. Of course they're not bad. We enjoy them. It's only when they're overdone and refined. It's the overdoing of the refined carbohydrates that has overworked the pancreas. So here's our pancreas. It lives under our left rib, and the pancreas releases 2 hormones to balance blood glucose levels. One is insulin, and insulin is the hormone designed to get the blood sugar levels down, because it's the key that unlocks the door to get the glucose out of the blood and into the cell or into storage as glycogen or fat. The other hormone is glucagon. And glucagon is the hormone that's designed to get the blood sugar levels up. So can you see these 2 hormones work together to balance our blood glucose levels? But what's happening on this high carbohydrate diet, releasing too much glucose, blood sugar levels go very, very high. And so a large amount of insulin is released. So this is how it happens. High glucose demands high insulin release. And because so much insulin was released, too much is going into the cells. So now the blood sugar levels go too low. And when the blood sugar levels go too low, then very quickly, the pancreas stops releasing insulin and releases the glucagon. And the glucagon is designed to get the blood sugar levels up again. But what does the person do when blood sugar levels are low? Cup of coffee with 3 teaspoons of sugar, a can of Coke, a candy, a sugar, something to get it up again. But because they took that, now we've gone too high in blood sugar levels. So very quickly the brain says to the pancreas, oh no, we're too high again, quick, stop the glucagon, release the insulin, get it down again. It is this whiplash that just wears pancreases out. You see, what God designed us to be eating is food that will give a steady, consistent delivery of fuel, so that every cell in the body is getting this consistent, constant delivery of fuel. So what will do that? Let's have a look at food. What will give the constant delivery of fuel is fiber. Foods that are high in fiber. Fiber binds up the glucose and just slowly releases it. And when it slowly, surely, consistently releases that glucose, you get blood sugar levels that'll go like that, instead of up and then the response is down and then the response is up again. The other food is protein. Protein also gives a very nice, consistent delivery of fuel, and so does fat. The body likes burning fat as fuel. You see, glucose burns at 4 calories per gram, whereas your fat, it burns at 9 calories per gram. And that's why the diabetic does well to have a food program that has high fiber, generous proteins, and the healthy fats. The proteins coming from the legumes, nuts and seeds. I met a man 10 years ago now, he was late 60s. He said to me, when I was in my 40s, I was told I was pre-diabetic. He said, yes, I was on the average, what they call it, the SAD diet, the standard American diet, very high carb. And I was told I was pre-diabetic, and the nutritionist that told me that said, eat legumes every day, because that will give you a lovely, consistent, sure delivery of fuel. So he said, I did. So the legumes, every day. He said, I never developed diabetes. Yes, they must be soaked. Yes, they must be well rinsed. Oh, and yes, please, for the sake of your taste buds, make them magnificent. If you want to know how to make legumes taste magnificent, get an Indian cookbook, get a Lebanese, Italian cookbook. Well, they know how to put beautiful flavor into their legumes. I have met many people who have, they don't have legumes a lot because they say they're boring. I said, they're only boring because you haven't made them fantastic. Put good quality oils in. That's what they did in Italy. Lots of finely chopped parsley, good quality salts. That's what your legumes need. They need flavor. You cook a packet of lentils and it will not taste very good. You need to put the flavor into it. And many people who've stopped eating meat and started eating a vegetarian diet, they need to replace that meat with the legumes. But because when you cook meat, it has flavor in it, they're not used to this way of cooking where you actually have to put the flavor in. It's like tofu, it's a tasteless sponge. If it doesn't taste any good, it's your fault for not putting some ginger and some garlic and some herbs and some salt, some good quality salts and oils to make it taste good. So your other proteins are your nuts and your seeds. And they're also your good fats. The other great fats are found in your avocado and also your coconut and your olive oils. You don't need much. They are concentrated foods. You don't need much at all, but you do need a little. The food that our cells need is that lovely, consistent delivery of fuel, which a high-fiber diet will do it. They're all your plant foods, your whole foods. The protein will certainly do it. Legumes, nuts and seeds, and the good fats. The nuts, seeds, avocado, coconut oils, olive oils. They're concentrated foods. You do not need much, but you do need it. It's an essential food group. Another type of protein is your whole grains. The whole grains are very important. And what you will find is that these foods are also low glycemic index foods. What's glycemic index? Glycemic index is a reading or a guide on how quickly the glucose in that food goes into your blood. So let me give you an illustration. So it's called GI, glycemic index, and it's easy to Google and get a glycemic index chart. So under 55 is considered low, above 65, above 55 is considered high. So grapefruit, it's very low, and I'm sure that's not a surprise to you. Grapefruit sits at 25, whereas cherries, they sit at 26. So for a diabetic, they're the best fruits. If you're not fussed on the grapefruit, believe me, you get used to it. Sorry, no sugar on top. You want to keep away from that. But all your berries are quite low. Kiwi fruit is quite low. Pear is another one that's quite low. Your watermelon's quite high. Where does sugar sit? Sugar sits at about 59. Whether it be white or tan or brown, it is all refined sugar, and that gets the blood sugar level up quite high. Banana sits, I think, at about 60. Sorry, I can't tell you exactly what that is, but you can search it out. Also potatoes. Potatoes and bananas, they are considered high. And that's why diabetics are told, keep away from the white potato and keep away from the banana. Whereas sweet potato, that's your yam, that's your, and you've got many sweet potatoes. You've got the purple sweet potato and the white sweet potato and the orange sweet potato. All your island root vegetables like cassava and taro, breadfruit, they all sit at quite a nice low. They're not down here, but I think they're something like 54, so they are considered low. And that's why the diabetic is better to stop the banana and go over to the berries, to stop the white potato and go over to the sweet potato. That can make a huge difference. So why is white potato high and sweet potato low? Because if you look at both of those root vegetables and you cut them open, you can't really see much difference. But under a microscope, it is revealed that the sweet potato has a very tight fiber structure and the white potato has a loose fiber structure. And the tight fiber structure means slow, steady release of the glucose, whereas the loose structure means the glucose is released quite quickly. So there's the difference. There's another article of food which probably most of these are made up of, and that is wheat. Wheat is playing a role, a big role in diabetes today. There's no doubt about it that sugar is certainly a big contributing factor to diabetes. Not honey, not maple syrup, though if someone has diabetes, they need to be cautious of the maple syrup and the honey until this pancreas starts to work a little bit better. But it is the refined sugar that gets the blood sugar level up incredibly high, incredibly fast. That's one of the biggest causative factors in diabetes. So how does the wheat play a role? It was in the 1950s, Dr. Norman Boulag and his team of researchers, they put the wheat through intensive crossbreeding. Their aim was to come up with a plant with a high yield of grain, and they did. When I was a little girl, the wheat grew very high, but today the wheat only grows about this high. They couldn't keep it that high because the high yield of grain caused the stalk to break. they went back to the drawing board and they came up with a thick stem and a wheat that only grows this high. When the wheat only grows that high and it has a thick stem, of course the stem doesn't break under the heavy yield of grain. We had a man do our program a few years ago and he said, my brother is a wheat farmer, and he was a wheat farmer also 30 years ago before the hybridized wheat was there. This hybridized wheat gives him 6 times more grain per acre. I can understand why the farmers love it. They've got to pay their bills. So in 1970, I think Dr. Norman Boulard got a Nobel Prize for his hybridized wheat. So by the end of the 1970s, that wheat went worldwide. So by the 1990s, every cereal, bread, cake, pizza, pasta, and your donuts and your cookies, all that come from the cake section, it's all made out of the hybridized wheat. What happened with the hybridization of the wheat? They rushed it through before any safety studies were done. And if you want to read the story of what they did to the wheat and its effect, you can read the book Wheat Belly by Dr. William Davis, and he shows very clearly. In fact, there's another book called Grain Brain by Dr. David Perlmutter. He's a neurologist. He shows the effect that it has on the way the brain moves. That's quite scary. So what he found in the hybridization of the wheat in his research, Dr. William Davis, that it changed the starch structure. So the starch structure that was produced is called amylopectin A. And amylopectin A gets the blood sugar level up very high, very fast. So that's a corresponding drop. There's your A. To give you something to compare it to, amylopectin B is found in bananas and potatoes. And as we just established, bananas and potatoes get the blood sugar level up reasonably high, reasonably fast. So this is your B in comparison, not as high, not as fast, not as low, not as quickly. There's your B. Amylopectin C is found in your legumes, your chickpeas or garbanzos, your lentils. And that amylopectin C starch, that gives a nice steady rise, a nice steady maintenance, and then a nice steady drop. Every cell in the body wants that. It wants that steady, sure, consistent delivery of fuel. Considering all that, let's have a look at the wheat on the glycemic index. So white bread, white cereal, we'll just say white wheat, all your refines, that sits at 69. That means it's higher on the glycemic index than sugar. Does that mean a slice of white bread will get the blood sugar level up higher than even sugar? It's because of the amylopectin A. What about whole wheat? So your whole wheat, where does it sit? 72. How could that be? Most people think the whole wheat bread is superior to the white. Well, in some ways it is. At least you've got fiber. At least your colon's going to be a bit swept, where it certainly will not with white wheat. One man told me he'd investigated what was in the high-fiber white bread and they put chook feathers in it. You call them chicken feathers. They're white. So why does the whole wheat bread, get the blood sugar level up higher than even white? How could that be? Well, because it has not been refined, it has more amylopectin A in it, and it's the amylopectin A that's getting the blood sugar level up higher. My husband said to me, Barbara, someone just rang up and said, Barbara says white bread's better than brown bread or whole wheat bread. He said, why are they saying that? And I said, aha. It's because I've been talking about the amylopectin A. I think you see the point. Yes, the whole wheat has more B vitamins. Yes, it has fiber in it. Oh, yes, but it has also more amylopectin A in it. So wheat is not good for the diabetic. Wheat is contributing to the diabetes that we are seeing today. Wheat is contributing to the true pandemic on planet Earth today, which is diabetes. So there are some things that should stop if you're looking to conquer diabetes. Absolutely the refined sugar. But also the hybridized wheat. So what can we eat? We can eat the ancient grains. They're called the ancient grains. What are the ancient grains? They're from the ancient wheat. They're called spelt, enkenhorn, kamut. There are three that have come from the original wheat. They have not been hybridized. They don't have the amylopectin A that will get the blood sugar level up very high, very fast. And you can buy pasta made out of these grains, you can buy bread made out of these grains, and ideally the sourdough bread, because the sourdough bread is a cultured bread, and that's the bread that was traditionally made all through Europe for thousands of years. It's only about 100 years ago they refined that sourdough culture so that it will only release yeast. The yeast bread is not the best bread for humans. It's almost indigestible. Whereas the sourdough bread, it would be better if it would be called cultured bread, because it is a light, sweet bread. And a good sourdough bread always is. And I gave you a website the other day. I'll give it to you again if you didn't catch that presentation. And this man, his name's Tristan, it's a family business. He makes the most beautiful sourdough bread. His website is www.simpleneeds. And you can buy sourdough kamut, you can buy sourdough rye, you can buy sourdough spelt, and he will ship anywhere in the US. And you'll get it the same day and put it in the freezer. It's very beautiful bread. So getting bread from there is a good bread for your diabetic, because it does not have the wheat. Caffeine disrupts blood sugar levels because caffeine causes a crisis response. And whenever a crisis response is happening in the human body, excess glucose is released to cope with that crisis response. And it is in that way that caffeine disrupts the blood sugar levels in the body. I'm going to give you an illustration. And this illustration, sadly, is what's happening in many people today. The lady's name is Sue, and she's a bush nurse, a country nurse, a community nurse. She goes out to country properties and helps people. She's a little bit overweight. She's carrying probably an excess of 40 pounds over what she knows she should be. So she decides to go on a diet. And on the diet, she has a rice cake for breakfast, and a bit of no-fat yogurt, and maybe half a grapefruit. I don't know about you, but that's not a very attractive breakfast for me. But she wants to lose weight. Now, by mid-morning, she is very hungry, so she has a cup of coffee with a couple of teaspoons of sugar in it and low-fat or no-fat milk, because she's on a diet, and she has read that if you want to lose weight, you've got to stop the fat. Now, I trust that we have already dispelled that myth for you. But let's just follow this lady. At lunchtime, she has two rice cakes. She has some no-fat cheese. I don't know what no-fat cheese would be. Maybe it's plastic, but it doesn't sound that great. And a couple of slices of tomato and a lettuce leaf on each one. And then she found some no-fat biscuits that she's taken for her dessert after her rice cakes, and a cup of coffee with 3 teaspoons of sugar to give her energy for the afternoon, and no fat milk. Mid-afternoon, she's hungry again. She has the other cup of coffee. She's driving home, and when she's driving home, she is starving. Did you know that hunger is the strongest urge in the human body? And did you know that there are scientists that are putting together certain smells that will trigger the appetite, part of your brain. And she's driving past some fast food shops that are selling pizza, and the scents coming out of there are actually chemical scents. And she thought, oh, I'll just park over here. Oh, they've got a no-fat cheese pizza. I don't know what that cheese is again. And it's on special. Have you ever seen the DVD, Supersize Me? It's this marketing thing. More pizza for less money. And so they want the bargain. Everyone wants a bargain. So she buys it. She thinks, well, I'm on a diet, so it's not much fat or very little. She's driving, and there's a tiny little voice that's saying, what about your diet? And she wants to block that voice, so she drives into the video store, and I guess this sounds like, oh, we don't have them anymore. Maybe she goes home and just does Netflix. But she buys a block of chocolate because she thinks, well, I'll just have one square. I'll make it last 6 months because I'm on the diet. She goes home, she puts her movie on. She wants a movie that's going to be hard and fast to take her mind off the conscience. It goes quite quick, 2.5 hours. She's lost out of life for 2.5 hours, doesn't have to think about what's happening in her life. But then reality hits, doesn't it? The movie, it finishes. She looks at the pizza packet, there's nothing left. She's eaten the whole pizza. She looks at the packet of chocolate. Oh dear, she's eaten the whole chocolate. All that glucose that was released into her body is zooming around. All the caffeine. There's not a lot of caffeine in one square, but she's eaten the whole chocolate. How is she going to sleep now? Oh, she's still trying to be on a diet. She'll have the zero Coke with maybe some scotch in there. That'll put her off to sleep. How does that lady wake in the morning? She feels terrible. She feels absolutely terrible. There's no worries about breakfast. She has no appetite at all, but she wants to stick to her diet. So she just grabs an apple on the way out. But as soon as she's dressed, she does something else. She feels so terrible. She'll have a cup of coffee with 3 teaspoons of sugar and the skim milk. That'll give her a bit of energy too. In the first 10 minutes, she eats her apple. She didn't realize the property was so far out. After an hour, her blood glucose levels are dropping very low. Glucagon is stimulated. The pancreas is stimulated to release glucagon, but the pancreas isn't in a very happy state. Because that pizza and that chocolate and that sugar in that coffee last night has exhausted it. And so the brain says, what are we going to do now? So it actually goes to the adrenal glands. And the adrenal glands, they release adrenaline. That's what you feel on the Big Dipper. Another type of adrenaline called noradrenaline. Cortisol, all of these hormones are stimulated when needed, and we need some fuel. All of those hormones are designed to release fat stores to give the excess glucose that you need. It's a bit of a crisis. She's dropping fast. But the adrenal glands are also sad. They were exhausted last night. So here, this one's exhausted. This one's exhausted. Number 3, what can we do now? Go to the pituitary gland, who will release the human growth hormone. The human growth hormone is also designed to release fat stores to give glucose. But the lady hasn't exercised for 10 years, and her human growth hormone hasn't been used for 10 years. And so we've got another sad face. It's also exhausted. So quickly, the body goes to the thyroid gland to release thyroxine. The thyroid gland controls metabolism, and when your metabolic rate drops, thyroxine's released so that it can activate the fat stores to give you the glucose that you need. But the lady's been on the pill for 10 years, which has opposed thyroid function. So we can't get anything there either. Can you see what's happening here? And she stays down. And the brain, that's the next organ to be affected. It can only hold a 2-minute supply of glucose. She knows she's got another half hour till she gets to the little town where she knows there's a corner shop. She's starting to fail fast because all her backup system is not working because she's exhausted it. She didn't just exhaust it the night before. It's been her food and her lifestyle for the last few years. And now all the organs are saying, we're done. There's nothing left. She tries to keep awake. She reaches for her candies. Oh, that's right. She used them all the other day. She reaches for her Zero Coke. Oh, it's empty too. She manages somehow to get that last section to the corner shop. She parks, not even realizing that one of her wheels is up on the gutter. She goes inside. She's not able to walk very well. The guy behind the counter looks at her. She goes over to the little fridge. She opens a can of Coke. She drinks it down. Whew, that's better. She looked every bit like a drug addict. Is she? Without even realizing it, she is. This refined sugar is a drug. It's refined as drugs are. It's highly addictive. The caffeine also is highly addictive. People get addicted to those highs. She felt a little better. Her blood sugar level went up very quick, which is what she wanted. She grabbed a whole packet of the Cokes. She grabbed a whole few packets of the candies. She paid her money. She felt a bit embarrassed. She's the local community nurse. The man behind the counter looks out the window and there's her car with the wheel up the gutter. She goes out. She's feeling quite embarrassed. She goes to the house where she's got to perform her duties. She's got her candy. She's got her Coke. She can keep herself maintained. Before she travels home, she buys a salad sandwich. She realizes she needs a bit of nutrition. On the way home, she's thinking. She's never been through that before. It was terribly embarrassing. She doesn't want that to happen again. So she goes to a psychiatrist. He says, I've found the cause of all your problems. You get depression. Is that the cause of all her problems? No, it's not the cause of all her problems. The cause of all her problems is this. It's this high carbohydrate diet. It's this caffeine she's having 3 or 4 times a day. I used to be a nurse. I know, nurses are the worst. They have a lot of caffeine, a lot of caffeine, a lot of coffee. Yes, it gives quick highs, but then you get corresponding lows. People don't realize it's like buy now, pay later. And this explains why when you want to conquer diabetes, you got to get these carbohydrates right down low. If you do have a carbohydrate, it should be something like brown rice or maybe these kamut breads, and not a lot, not a lot. So it's important to have also low carbohydrates. Not no carbohydrates. It's impossible to do no carbohydrates. You're going to get some carbohydrates in your legumes, but not a lot. You're going to get some in your whole grains, a little bit more, but still not a lot. You're going to get a little bit of carbohydrate in your low GI fruits. You need a little, but not a lot. The problem with this diet is just overload, total overload, overloading the pancreas, wearing pancreases out. Something else that must stop is your altered fats. Your altered fats interfere with the insulin being able to get into the cell. Your good fats will not do that. Your fats, as they come from the hand of the Creator, will not do that. so the altered fats must also stop. What also is needed is exercise. Exercise is vital in conquering diabetes. Let me show you why. We had a young man do our program. He was only 19. He'd got diabetes at the age of 15, type 1 diabetes. He had a very bad chest cold, and he was given a very strong course of antibiotics, which knocked off quite a few of the beta cells in his pancreas. The doctor had told him that. So now he had type 1 diabetes. When he came to our program, he heard the lectures on the carbohydrates, and he realized that's what he was doing. He was eating a lot of this to get his blood sugar level up, not realizing, yes, it gets it high, but then you get the corresponding dump because it went too high, and then the glucagon had to be released, and then it goes too low. On this diet, the pancreas and the glucagon, they work very nicely together. It's just the quick highs producing the quick lows, that's the problem. And so while he was at our health retreat, he had a plant-based diet. In fact, he chose not to have any carbohydrates and not any fruits. So he didn't have any whole grains, but he had legumes every meal. He had some nuts and seeds. He had lots of vegetables. He had the avocados, the good oils. He was certainly full. There's three foods that keep the food in the stomach longer: fiber, protein, and fat. He would get blood sugar level lows in the middle of the night. So he had some candies. He took a candy or a lolly. Oh, that would get it up, but that would always give him a headache because it got it up so high. The second week, he felt a little guilty. He was with us for 4 weeks. The second week, he felt a little guilty. So if you got a blood sugar level low in the middle of the night, he'd have an apple. It takes a while to keep an apple, especially in the middle of the night. It would get his blood sugar levels up, but he wouldn't get the headache. On the third week, after hearing the lecture, after hearing the value of the glycogen stores, their quick-release glucose stores, they're sitting in your muscle cell waiting to be called. And when they're called, how are they called? Exercise. And when they're called, the body releases them and puts them straight into the energy cycle. They're already in there. They don't even need insulin because they're in there. So on the third week, if you got a blood sugar level low in the middle of the night, he would get up and do 30 push-ups. And that would bring his blood sugar levels up. How? His glycogen stores were released. He had energy because of the release of the glycogen stores. In fact, he told me that one morning he got up and his blood glucose levels were 3. These are the Australian, this is the Australian guidelines. In the Australian guidelines, blood sugar levels should sit at about 6.5. 6.5. His was 3. That's nearly passing out. A diabetic can often have 15, 16, even 20 blood sugar levels. That's too high. He got up and his blood sugar levels were 3. He took some salt. He took a glass of water. He got dressed, he took another bit of salt and another glass of water, and then he went for a run up and down the hills. When he came back, he took his blood sugar levels and they were 9. Where'd that come from? Right here. Right here in the glycogen stores. And if he ran out of glycogen stores, then his human growth hormone would be released, and the human growth hormone releases the fat stores to give the glucose that we need. In fact, he said to me that afternoon, he said, why didn't anyone tell me about glycogen? That's why I call it the diabetic's best kept secret. It's the glycogen stores. And this is why exercise is so important. Exercise is important not only to release the glycogen stores, exercise is important because it increases blood supply to the pancreas. And when you increase blood supply to the pancreas, you wake it up. Another reason why exercise is so important is when you're exercising, the pancreas is moving. And that strengthens it and tones it. Dan, that was his name. Dan said to me, "My doctor told me my pancreas was dead." I said, "Is it gangrene? What's dead? You can't have half dead or nearly dead." Why was Dan getting blood sugar level lows? Because he was on too much insulin. Because the food that we gave him did not require as much insulin. So little by little, he had to back off. He had to back off the insulin. After 3 weeks, he'd gone from 90 units of insulin a day down to 10 units of insulin a day. What does that mean? His pancreas is once again working. We live in an incredible body with an inbuilt ability to heal itself. And it will heal itself if you give it the right conditions. Before Dan came to us, he didn't know the conditions. He learnt the conditions. He learnt the best way, and that's experimental education. He was hearing the whys and he was experiencing it. Low GI foods are also very important in the journey to conquer diabetes. Exercise is vital in the journey to conquer diabetes. Water. Dan would not have got those results early in the morning if he hadn't drunk water. But notice what else he had? He had that little bit of salt. So what we need, 8 to 10 glasses a day. The larger the person, the more water they need. The larger the person, usually the more they perspire. But the Celtic salt. What the salt does is it helps the water to get into the cell and it helps to release the glycogen stores. The pancreas needs water to make the insulin, to make the glucagon. Every single part of our body needs water. And there's no reserve tank on the back. The only water that goes into your body is the water that you put into your body. Dan left us a very happy young man. He had tools for life. He had tools to show how he could conquer his diabetes. Something else started to happen too. His mother said he came home happy. He often gets so grumpy. When the blood sugar levels are down and the brain can only hold a 2-minute supply of fuel, then the mood goes down. No wonder William Dufty called his book Sugar Blues, because that's what sugar causes, the blues. It gives an initial high, but then it takes you down. What's that down called? Blues, depression, grumpy. In fact, his grandmother said, "He came to visit me. He sat, he talked to me." There's a change in the mood because the brain cells are getting this consistent, steady delivery of fuel. The pancreas is reviving because it's not being screamed at. It's also important to have sleep because it's while we sleep that the body revives and recharges and regenerates. 8 hours, not negotiable. You've got a choice with the 8 hours. It can be 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. or it could be 9 to 5, probably my favorite, or it could be at a stretch 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Those early hours are important. That's when the delivery system happens, that's when the courier system happens, that's when the cleaning system happens. And it's in the later hours of the night, that's when the filing happens, that's when the dreaming happens. So those early hours are essential. When the pancreas is given the right conditions, it revives, it becomes happy. Let me tell you another story to illustrate. This man's name was Bobby. He was 62. He came to our retreat, it's probably about 5 years ago now. It was one of the American retreats. He said to me, "I've spent $1 million on my health in the last 10 years. He said, "The doctors have just told me they can do no more for me." He said, I'm diabetic, I'm on cholesterol medication, blood thinning medication, blood sugar medication, actually 90 units of insulin a day, some long acting, some short acting. He said, recently they took the lymph nodes out of my groin to see if they could work out why I have diabetes. So when he came to us, he was in a wheelchair because the flight caused his legs to swell. He said, I've just spent $800 on these bandages. I said, well, I think we can show you how to conquer those without the bandages. I said to him, for 1 minute every hour, I want you to get onto the rebounder, even if you just start with this. Because the rebounder stimulates movement of the lymphatic fluid in the body, and his legs were swollen with lymphatic fluid because his lymph nodes in his groin had been taken away. Bobby went on the diet that I've explained to you. With exercise, the best exercise for him was the rebounder or the exercise bike. He started to drink more water. He stopped the caffeines. And of course, we don't serve coffee or red wine. He had a total lifestyle change. He said to me, anything you say, I will do. He sat next to me at the meal table every meal and he said, is this right? Have I got the meal right? And I said, yeah, looks pretty good, Bobby. He had 2 meals a day. He had breakfast, then he had lunch. We gave him a protein drink to take into his room in case he got a blood sugar level low because he was still on the insulin. And at first, of course, they have to be. You're the doctor. I always leave it with the person. You're taking your blood sugar levels, you can play with it. What was incredible was after 2 weeks, his blood sugar levels had started to stabilize and he was on 10 units of insulin a day instead of 90. He emailed me 3 months later. He said, I've lost 45 kilos. What's that, 90 pounds? He said, I'm off all my medication. He was a type 1 diabetic. He said, I'm off all my medication. I'm doing exactly what you told me. He said, I'm keeping those 8 doctors. He said, I go to bed early. I said, tell me about your exercise program. He said, I swim 30 laps a day. He said, I rebound every day and I bicycle 6 miles a day. I said, that's impressive, Bobby. He said, I went to the doctor. They are astonished. He said, I've gone back to full-time work. He was the CEO of some big companies. At first, his wife said, this is your baby. I'm not interested. She was 42. He was 62. But after 3 months, when she looked at her husband, her new husband, she became interested. And the last email I got from him, he said, she's on board. She's happy because she needed to lose a little weight. She's happy she's gone out and bought some new outfits. All her girlfriends are saying, what happened to you? It is so simple. So simple. You're the doctor. And remember that the human body was designed to heal itself, and it will heal itself when you give it the right conditions. We've seen it many times. But I think what will make you the happiest is when you see it happen in your life. Consistency is the key. Don't give up. Give the body time, but little by little by little, you will start to see the changes. I trust you'll enjoy the program.
If this episode impacted you, please share it with others. Amazing Discoveries is a donor-supported ministry. To help us keep producing content like this, visit amazingdiscoveries.org. And, as always, you can find the visual presentation of this episode on adtv.watch.